Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the New Books Network. I'm Marshall Poe, the editor-in-chief. Each week, we scour the internet looking for interesting books, and we interview the authors of them. This week, I'm very pleased to say we have Neil Gross on the show, and we'll be talking about his terrific book, Why Are Professors Liberal, and Why Do Conservatives Care? This is an extraordinarily good question. I love the title of this book because it's completely telegraphic. This is something that, if you are sort of inside academia, which is to say inside baseball, you really want to know the answer to this question because it's often discussed in the media, and everybody seems to have a kind of folk theory about why, well, if professors are liberal, and then if they in fact are, why? Well, I'm very happy to say that Neil has rolled his sleeves up and he has some answers, some concrete answers, answers you can take to the bank about this question. So I was very pleased to get and read his book, and I'm pleased to talk with him today. So Neil, thanks so much for being on the show.
Marshall, thanks for having me.
Sure. Maybe you could begin the interview by telling us a little bit about yourself.
Sure. Well, I'm a sociologist at the University of British Columbia in Vancouver. I lived in Vancouver for about 5 years. And before that, I taught at the University of Southern California and Harvard. So I'm an American, born and raised in the San Francisco Bay Area, and have lived a bunch of places at this point.
Mm-hmm, I see. Was this your first project, or did you do projects prior to this?
It's not my first project. It's my second solo authored book. My first one was a sociological biography of the philosopher Richard Rorty, which was sort of a case study designed to help answer the question of why philosophers get interested in the particular approaches and ideas that they do. And I've done other edited volumes and articles before. So this is my second big book.
Right. So would you consider this a departure? Or did it flow out of the Rorty project or something else?
I mean, it's not a complete departure. I mean, my earlier stuff, much of it has been about academic life, and so I think there's some continuity there. I mean, this book has the research for this book involved a great deal more quantitative work, studies with statistics of various kinds than some of my earlier stuff did. So in that sense, it's a departure, and you know, it's also a movement into politics. Which is a bit at odds with what I've done before. So, some continuity, some change as well.
Mm-hmm. As I said in the pre-interview, usually I ask people why they wrote the books that they wrote. I imagine you have a kind of good story about that. Why did you write this book? It's a controversial topic.
Yeah. Well, I first got interested in this when I was an assistant professor at Harvard. And this was a time when Harvard President Lawrence Summers had made some really controversial comments about the role of intrinsic ability in explaining why there weren't more women at the highest levels in math and science. Huge controversy ensued on campus and outside the university. Lots of conservative critics and some others said, this is evidence of political correctness just gone crazy in higher education. And during the same period, David Horowitz, a very prominent conservative activist, out in California, was busy mounting what he called a campaign for an academic bill of rights. And the goal of this was to, as he put it, protect students against political indoctrination in the classroom. And I was surrounded by all of this stuff happening, I thought to myself, this was really interesting, raised some interesting sociological questions. And when I looked at the existing research on this, I found it to be less than fully satisfactory. And so I thought this would be a good second project for me to take up.
Less than fully satisfactory. That's very well said. I would have said something different.
Well, I mean, there's sort of two strands of research that have been done on this before. I mean, there is a longstanding body of work by sociologists that looks at the political leanings of intellectuals, and that work's pretty smart. It's pretty rich theoretically. It's pretty savvy. So that work existed. It wasn't completely satisfactory to me either, in part because most of it wasn't about American professors specifically, and also because it was fairly theoretical, but not necessarily that factually based. But then there's a second body of work which I think is not as satisfactory, and that's really work that sprang up more recently And, you know, it involved surveys of various kinds that were designed either by folks on the right or by the left, essentially with the goal of showing either how liberal, you know, higher education had become or of countering claims that higher education was liberal. And, you know, some of the findings produced here weren't terrible, but you know, I thought that it was, you know, most of this work was done with a kind of political basis to it. And, you know, I wanted to do something that was a bit more kind of standard social science.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, one thing that I found interesting in the book is that a similar sort of survey study had been done quite a while ago by a famous sociologist, or I guess he was in communications. I don't know, really, and I'm blanking on his name right now.
Well, there had been a couple of these before. There was one by Paul Lazarsfeld.
Yeah, Paul Lazarsfeld is the person I'm thinking about.
Very prominent social scientist, sociologist, and this had been done during the McCarthy era. So this was one of the first big surveys of American professors, a survey of social scientists, and it was, you know, mostly concerned with whether they were feeling the heat from McCarthy's efforts and the efforts of local and state investigating committees, but he also asked a bunch of questions about politics. And then there have been other surveys subsequent to that. I mean, there was a very large survey that was done in the late 60s, and much more recently there have been other surveys. So, you know, it's not like this is the first study of the topic, but, you know, I wanted to combine both a kind of theoretically rich analysis of it with you know, a bunch of factual material.
Mm-hmm. Well, you did so, and you showed great ingenuity in designing these studies and also great patience, because I know as an academic, I always want to get out the first thing I find. But you didn't do that. You waited.
Well, I will say this book was 7 years in the making,
yeah.
And I have you know, released bits and pieces of this research along the way, but it did take some time to pull it all together.
Uh-huh, uh-huh. So let's start with the questions themselves. Now you say, why are professors liberal? Let's establish the fact. Are okay. professors liberal in the United States?
Yeah, they are. I mean, I think they're not as leftist as some conservatives would like to claim, but they're, you know, probably more liberal than many liberals would like to believe. Well, the survey data on this are pretty strong. You know, whether you look at political self-identification or political attitudes, well, somewhere between 50% and 60% of American professors are probably classifiable as broadly on the left, and certainly Democrats outnumber Republicans by a wide margin in the academy. Now, against, you know, conservative charges, there aren't that many radicals in higher education. There's much talk about this these days, and, you know, something like 9% of American academics are probably classifiable as political radicals on the left, not an overwhelming proportion. But, you know, nevertheless, academics are a liberal group. And, you know, if you look at major occupations in the U.S., academia is actually at or near the top of that list. Now, these lists are, you know, you get kind of different answers depending on how you code things, what exactly you count as the different occupations, and so on. But it's certainly a very left-leaning or a very liberal-leaning occupation. There are other occupations, of course, that are as right-leaning as higher education is left-leaning. You know, the clergy is one of them. The medical profession's close to being that way as well. But yes, it is in fact a liberal-leaning occupation. Mm-hmm.
So we shouldn't doubt this anymore. There's no more debate about this, really.
I don't think there's. Yeah, I mean, I think that you know, to some extent, the debate about this is just driven by different factions. I mean, when we talked to professors as part of this research, we also did, you know, in addition to the, you know, surveys that we did and quantitative work, we also just went and did interviews with professors, and we sometimes found professors saying, "Well, look, I mean, you know, you can look at." You know, part of the identification, find that lots of professors are Democrats, but, you know, the Democrats really aren't that liberal. They're a more kind of center left party, and you know, they would also add, well, and if you look at business school professors and professors of engineering, you find that they're not really very liberal. And so, you know, these claims that academia is biased toward the left are overstated. And I mean, they have a point in certain ways. I mean, it is true that the Democratic Party is not as left as many left-leaning parties in other nations are. And it's also true that there's, you know, considerable variation across fields. You know, engineers, computer scientists, business professors, you know, definitely much less liberal than social scientists and humanists. But nevertheless, you know, all this aside, it's still one of the more liberal occupations in American society. So I think that's right. I mean, I think most people have recognized this for some time. So it's not like the data in the book are, you know, completely novel. Again, there's been lots of other surveys that show something kind of similar. But, you know, I hope that that the book will at least allow, this to be taken as, more of a given that by some than it has. So we can move on to talk about causes and consequences.
Yeah, before we do that, let's talk a little bit about keep mapping the terrain itself, to use an analogy. So let's talk about change over time and then within different academic disciplines. Is the professorate more or less liberal than it was, I don't know, before World War II or since McCarthy or since the Vietnam era?
Sure. Well, you know, some of these things are hard to track over time, in part because there haven't been that many surveys. And when there have been surveys, they haven't exactly, you know, studied the same populations, and they haven't always used the same measures. So it's very hard to tell precisely. And what's more, you know, the meanings of liberal and conservative have changed over the years. And so, you know, tracking these things up gets complicated. But I guess in response to your question, I'd say two things. First, that academia leans left is something that's been true for a really long time. I mean, there's evidence going back to, you know, the 30s, the 40s, certainly, of a pretty liberal, democratically inclined professoriate. But when you go even further back in history, that starts to become more murky. But certainly, at least to the 40s, there's evidence of higher education leaning to the left. So, you know, there's nothing new about it. People have been talking about this for a long time. That having been said, of course, there are also changes over time. It's often thought that the 60s were a huge watershed in academic politics, and in some ways they were. I mean, this was a period when there were lots of folks who were associated with movements of that era who then entered higher education and kind of helped remake their fields, and I think that's true. That certainly has had an effect. But if you look at data comparing, say, 1969 to 1997, and on these two comparison points, there actually is fairly good data. You find that academia has grown more liberal, but it's not dramatically so. It's only about an 8 percentage point gain. And almost all of that change, it turns out, is among women in higher education. Not very much change among men in terms of their liberal self-identification, but quite a bit of change among women. I think that more recent data would suggest that there might be even more of a shift to the left. But so the answer is that there have been some changes over time, but they're not as huge and dramatic as at least some people are inclined to think.
Mm-hmm. And then between disciplines or groups of disciplines, are there differences apparent?
Well, again, that's that's hard to track. There have been some changes to the extent that we're able to note them, but there have also been some continuities. I mean, for example, there's some evidence to suggest that the natural sciences may have moved somewhat to the left. There is some evidence to suggest that relative to the 60s, economics may have moved somewhat to the right. But what stands out in the complexity of this data is, more than that, is just the incredible stability of where disciplines stand in relation to one another. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, if you look at the survey that I talked about from the 60s, you find that even then, the social sciences, with the exception of economics, but sociology, anthropology, political science, these tended to be very left-leaning, the humanities, very left-leaning, whereas, as you move in the direction of more applied fields, business and engineering, you find more conservatives, and that's true today as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is one of the things that I found surprising in this statistic, that roughly 60% of professors or academics are liberal, because I know, working in the humanities and social sciences as I have for over 20 years, the figure is a lot higher than that, or at least it seemed to me anecdotally.
Right. I think that's right. I mean, there is quite a bit of variation across disciplines. And, one of the things that's funny and strange about higher education, although, not, I think, particularly unusual relative to other kinds of organizations, is that, if you're in a discipline, or even if you're in a kind of disciplinary grouping like the social sciences or humanities, you might not know that many people in other parts of the university, different departments of universities, yeah. Although this is, somewhat less the case in liberal arts schools, but are kind of walled-off domains, and people don't always cross those lines. So sometimes it's hard to know what's going on elsewhere.
Another segment of academia that you deal with is administration itself. That is, academics that go into administration are administrators, and I know the perception is that those people tend to be more conservative, I guess. Is that true?
Well, I don't have any data on this specifically, but there was a survey done by Inside Higher Ed on this not too long ago, and it suggested that that administrators do tend to be more supportive of the Democrats, kind of as you'd expect.
Yeah, I see. Okay. So one of the interesting things that you did, in addition to conducting all this sort of survey data, is you went and talked to people. And one of the questions you asked them, and I thought this was brilliant, is ask them, that is academics and other people, I guess, why they thought there was this, if I can use this word, bias. Why is it the case that most academics are liberals? Can you kind of go through the most popular, I call them folk theories, because they're not based on really anything other than, you know, what people have heard and their sort of personal experiences. So can you talk a little bit about some of them?
Sure. Well, the two most commonly cited reasons were, first, the idea that conservatives tend to be more closed-minded than liberals. So this was a kind of folk theory invoking ideas from psychology, personality theory, and so on. And the claim was that, you know, if you're kind of closed-minded and not open to new ideas, you know, you're not going to fit very well in higher education because academics are supposed to be open-minded. And the second reason often cited had to do with values, and specifically with the idea that if you're interested in making money, you're not going to want to go into higher education. So lots of professors said, look, if you're a young, you know, conservative, you prioritize making money, and so, you know, higher education is not the kind of career that you'd go for. So these were the most common explanations.
Mm-hmm. There's another one I know that I read in the book, and my wife actually had this one initially. She said, well, you know, liberal people, they're just smarter.
Yeah, that's pretty common as well. And there's certainly a lot of commentary on this.
So you investigated these three claims, and what did you find out about them?
Well, you know, I don't find strong. So, I mean, just to take the last one you mentioned, the cognitive ability one. I mean, the data that I review in the book suggests that has very little effect on explaining differences between professors and other Americans in terms of how liberal professors are. And, you know, there's lots of different ways of measuring that. The data that we've looked at suggests that it, you know, really doesn't have much of an impact. I mean, for example, one of the studies that I did with some colleagues was a study of who goes to graduate school, where this was a survey that tracked people from adolescents to their college-going years to then the years when at least some of them would have gone to graduate school. So we were able to compare people who went to graduate school with people who just stopped at a bachelor's degree. And there were big differences in the political views of the two groups. People who went to graduate school were quite a bit more liberal than people who didn't go to graduate school. But when we looked at a pretty complicated measure of cognitive ability, that didn't explain any of that difference away. So I don't think it's cognitive ability per se. The personality bit of it is harder to assess because the data on this aren't terrific. Again, in the same study of who went to graduate school, we found some evidence to suggest that liberals are more likely to go to graduate school because they're more likely to state that they are interested in abstraction, which is one measure sometimes used to measure openness to new experience. And that was a quite significant finding. But the evidence that I review in the book suggests that there's lots of ways to interpret that, and it's not at all clear that something like intrinsic personality differences driving that. And then finally, with respect to the claim that conservatives are only interested in making money, the data that I looked at and that others have looked at too finds that young conservatives are somewhat more interested in making money than young liberals, but it's really people in the moderates who don't necessarily have strong political views who in the college years are the most interested in making money. If you really want to make money, you're probably not that involved with politics. You're really focused on, you know, starting a business or whatever. I don't find tremendous support for any of these theories. Although, you know, in some instances they may help explain some things.
I see. So let me ask you this. It might be a little bit out of the ken of your book, but as a general rule can we say? What is the best predictor of someone's political leanings? Is there a couple of factors where sociologists say, well, it's this, like it's what your parents were? That works with, say, for instance, religion. But is there sort of a general consensus about this?
Well, I mean, there's some consensus and there's some debate. I mean, certainly what your parents view, what your parents' party affiliation is a very powerful leaning of your politics. I mean, of course, there are people who convert, no question about it. But nevertheless, it tends to remain a pretty strong and stable predictor of what your political views are. And then there are also quite strong, kind of demographic predictors, as you can imagine. If you come from particular racial or ethnic groups, or mm-hmm. Some of them, those can be quite strong predictors of your politics as well.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's interesting. So one of the things you address in the book as well, another empirical claim, a kind of folk theory, is that it's graduate school that makes you liberal. Does graduate school make you liberal?
Well, again, not really.
It makes you poor and insane.
Right. I mean, the data we looked at, suggests no. I mean, again, the data aren't perfect. But when we looked to see whether students who were enrolled in graduate school had moved to the left since their time in college relative to people who were in college but then didn't go to graduate school, we found that they moved to the left a little bit, but not very much. And when you talk to professors and you ask them to recount the stories of how they formed their politics, some of them will say that they found graduate school to be important in the sense that they learned deeper ways of thinking about the basis for their beliefs, particularly among social scientists and humanists. For example, some will say, while I was in graduate school, I learned to understand inequality in a deeper way, and so it kind of fortified my commitment to the left. So you do find a fair amount of that kind of talk, but you also find people saying that basically they had formed their political views in college or before graduate school, and there's a fair amount of other evidence to suggest that that's true as well. So most people, it seems, don't really shift that much in graduate school, but instead develop their politics before they develop the aspiration to become professors.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, I see. So that leads us to your theory, and could you explain it for us?
Sure. Yeah. Well, part of the impetus for the theory was to make sense of the fact that professors have been a liberal group for a really long time, it could be that there's something just intrinsic about the nature of intellectual work that demands that liberals step in and fill the intellectual role, and that's a possibility. But another possibility that I thought worth exploring, and for which I think there's some evidence, is that there's a kind of self-reproducing process at play here. And the idea goes like this. Academia developed a reputation for liberalism, as I said, back in the 30s or 40s, maybe even a little earlier, an initial reputation for liberalism. And as that reputation spread, it became part of just the fact about higher education. It was something that was fairly commonly known. As that reputation developed and crystallized, young people who were on the left, who were considering different kinds of careers, would just naturally think of higher education as something that's kind of on the menu of possibilities from which they might choose. Whereas if you're on the right, you would think to yourself, that's just not for me. And the argument is that then grows and builds over time. So more people develop this, more people form aspirations based on the reputation of academe. And as it happens, more liberals go into academe and the reputation solidifies. And the parallel here for me was really with gender. One of the ways that sociologists explain occupational sex segregation, or the tendency to find many more men than women in certain fields and many more women than men in other fields, one way that sociologists explain these differences is by pointing to the role of something like gender ideologies. And the idea is that if you think about the world in a certain way and you come to think about a particular job as kind of naturally male or naturally female, that might influence the kind of thing that you're want to do. So many young people think of nursing, for example, as a kind of traditionally female occupation. And with that reputation in place, many young women form the aspiration to become nurses, and very few young men form the aspiration to become nurses. And so the argument that I make in the book, and this is something that I developed initially with Ethan Fossey, who's a graduate student at Harvard, was the idea that something similar is happening for the professoriate. There's a reputation out there that academia leans left, and so if you're a young, smart liberal, you might think to yourself, what am I going to do with my life? And here's a list of different things I might consider, and academia is on that list. And if you're a young, smart conservative, you would think to yourself, not exactly for me. And the idea is that this works not through complex calculations about will I succeed in academia, will I not succeed in academia. I mean, that might be true for some, but the idea was that it's more a question of fit, of feeling like I belong here or I don't belong here. Of course, this is meant as a probabilistic theory, so there are going to be some conservatives who push through into the academic life despite that reputation and so on. But our idea was that this is a big part of what drives it.
How did you find this out? What is the evidence for this? I mean, other than the fact that we have the stereotype that happens to be true, evidence do you have of positive evidence of self-selection?
Well, there's lots of evidence of self-selection. I think the evidence about the reputational fit stuff is still more circumstantial than let's say fully developed. But the best evidence we have for self-selection is just if you look at the political views of college students who want to become professors, or of graduate students. So if you look at survey data that ask people their political views and that also ask them what they want to do for a living, these are surveys of college students. You find that. Whether you're looking at first-year students or college seniors, among those who say they want to become professors, the distribution of liberals to conservatives is pretty much about the same as you find in the professoriate.
Hmm.
And similarly, if you look at political views among graduate students, as we did now or as other scholars did in the late 60s, you find that the distribution of political views among graduate students is about the same as you find among the professoriate. So, this is evidence of kind of self-selection all the way down. Young conservatives or young liberals are more apt to want to go into higher education, and then do go into higher education. So there's pretty good evidence of self-selection, and there are other possible things that could drive self-selection, but those don't seem to be those don't really seem to hold up. We talked about some of them, personality, values, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of other positive evidence, I mean, again, there's evidence suggests that many people do buy into the idea that higher education leans to the left. There's certainly good evidence that chunks of the public think this is true. As you mentioned, in terms of folk theories, there's also pretty good evidence that most professors think that there's a kind of a natural fit between being a liberal and being a professor, in the same way that many people think there's just kind of a natural fit between being a man and being in construction, say. I think there's really strong evidence of self-selection. The evidence that it's driven by reputational factors is still more circumstantial. It would be really great to get a study going where you kind of follow smart, high-achieving students from, say, their high school days into their mid-20s when some had decided to become academics and some hadn't. And you could really look to see, whether reputational factors were kind of the driving force. That research hasn't been done yet, but it'd be fascinating to see what it would turn out.
Mm-hmm. One of the reasons I ask about the general predictors of one's political ideology was that I wanted to link it to something that I noticed when I entered academia, and that is that, at least in my field, which is history, a pretty large percentage of the people in my graduate school cohort had parents who were academics.
Mm-hmm.
So there was these two things going together. It's actually an astoundingly large percentage when I think about
it.
Can you talk a little bit about that? Did I make that up, or is that true?
No. That's right. The evidence certainly suggests that if your parent is an academic, the chances increase that you'll become an academic. And there are lots of occupations where something like this
sure.
is true. I mean, if we were talking about doctors, in my medical school class, there were lots of people, whose parents were doctors or whatever.
Sure.
So this isn't unique to higher education,
no.
but. But it is true. You know, that probably plays a role in explaining why academics are liberal. I mean, if in the first generation academics are liberal, then they raise their kids to be Democrats, you know, not surprising that their kids would tend to be on the left as well. So the numbers on this suggest that does play a role. It's probably more true in some fields than others. I think history may be high in this regard, although I haven't seen any systematic evidence of this. But I think your point is certainly well taken.
Yeah, I haven't seen any systematic evidence about it at all. Yeah. So I'm trying to think how to put this. So if I'm a conservative young person and I'm thinking about going in academia, I think, well, academia, that's pretty liberal. And if I try to go into academia, then there may be some bias against me, that I may suffer some sort of discrimination. I think this is a pretty common thought. And you did an interesting little test to see if that was true or false. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Sure. Well, I mean, one of the arguments that's often made by folks on the right is that the reason that there aren't more conservatives in higher education is because at some point or other, liberals sort of took over the academic hiring process and then just refused to hire other conservatives or even to really support conservative graduate students. So, you know, the claim is that there's bias against conservatives and even open discrimination against them. It's hard to get really systematic evidence of that kind of discrimination. I mean, there is some evidence to suggest that there's a bias in the sense of kind of negative feelings toward conservatives by at least some liberal or left academics. I mean, that is not surprising, and there is some evidence to suggest that's true. But the question is, you know, does this play a role in explaining why higher education is to the left? And I don't doubt that there may have been some instances in which there has been active discrimination. I mean, I haven't been privy to the hiring process enough to have witnessed anything like that myself, but you know, we did attempt a sort of systematic test of this, and the way this worked was as follows. With some colleagues, we sent emails from fake prospective students to the directors of graduate studies, who are kind of in charge of administratively of graduate programs in the leading American departments, in several social sciences and humanities fields. And so each director of graduate study got two emails. One from a student who didn't say anything about politics, and the other from a student who mentioned in passing that he'd previously worked on the McCain or the Obama campaigns. And the emails were from students who said, you know, I'm interested in your program. Would I potentially be a good fit there? And the emails were otherwise matched in terms of student interests and qualifications and so on. And then we measured the responses we got back. Did people respond to the emails? How enthusiastic were the responses? How much emotional warmth did they show? How quickly did people respond and so on? And when we analyzed responses, we found that there was some small evidence of favoring liberal applicants, but it was really minuscule. Basically no difference. And this isn't, I think, knock down, drag out evidence that there's no discrimination against conservative students. But I think it is evidence that despite the fact that higher education is a pretty liberal institution, and the social sciences and humanities more so than other disciplines, that most professors are professionals, and they try to keep their politics out of their evaluation of academic personnel. And I'll just say that it's consistent with evidence from another big survey that was done back in the late 90s that asked professors outright if they'd been the subject of any political discrimination. And only about 7% of conservative professors said that they had been. So, I mean, I don't doubt that there's certainly hostility toward conservatives on the part of some liberal academics. But I think the evidence isn't strong that the left tilt of academia is a result of discrimination. And, another way to think about this is to say that if there's so much self-selection, there's really no one to discriminate against. If very few conservatives are thinking about entering higher education, if very few conservatives are going into PhD programs in the social sciences and humanities, then it means that very few job applicants in these fields are conservative. And so there's kind of no one to discriminate against. Mm-hmm. That's the evidence that I presented in the book anyway.
Mm-hmm. That's consistent with my own experience. I don't think I've ever really seen any political discrimination on that level. Now, there are other sorts of tendentious things that happen in academia.
Sure. Sure.
They are entirely separate and depersonalized, and they are tilted in one direction or the other. But I've never seen in a job application process or in a interviewing graduate students or anything like that any sort of political litmus test or anything like that. I think once you get to that level, then it just becomes about qualifications.
Right. I mean, and this is particularly so. I mean, the sciences are an interesting case here. I mean, the sciences are really quite liberal, the natural and physical sciences. And in those fields, there's in most instances, it would be impossible to know when evaluating personnel what their politics were. And yet, it's still more liberal. It's still very left-leaning. These are still left-leaning disciplines. In fairness to the conservative argument, I think it is true that part of what's going on here is that in some social sciences and humanities fields, folks on the left have sometimes pushed their fields, pushed the content of their fields in directions that will kind of only appeal to folks on the left, or appeal primarily to folks on the left. And if there are very few, if applicants for graduate study or if job applicants just aren't interested in those fields, and those happen to be the fields in which there's hiring taking place, there's not going to be that many, not much room for conservatives. So in labor studies programs, for example, is there going to be much interest in people who are, explicitly anti-labor or something like that? Mm-hmm. Probably not. But on the other hand, there are programs, sort of comparable programs in business schools for folks on the right. So, I think that the ultimately discrimination argument doesn't have tremendous weight.
Mm-hmm. So this is all very interesting because to draw a conclusion, what I guess you've discovered is that, first of all, let's just take two facts. One is that graduate school doesn't make you a liberal. And second, if you go out in the job market and you're a conservative, that you're probably not going to suffer any discrimination. So why do we care whether professors are liberal or not?
Yeah. Well, this is a good question. I think that many conservatives anyway care because they think that politics can't help but affect the way that research is done in some fields, and so they think that in those fields there ought to be more kind of political balance in the classroom. So I think that's part of the reason that at least some folks on the right care about.
Right, but if I could just stop you there for a moment. I've heard these arguments many times, and let me just I know that one of the nice things you do in the book is that you say that you're I don't know how to characterize it. I don't remember your exact words, but you're more or less liberal. I'm more or less conservative, but I'm asking my conservative colleagues, what evidence is there that what is presented in college has any impact on somebody's politics? And if it doesn't have any impact, who the hell cares?
Right.
I mean, I don't understand it. I mean, it's one thing to say, that there's indoctrination going on, but there obviously isn't indoctrination going on. And I know that I never did any of it, and I've never seen any evidence of it.
Right. Well, I think that from the standpoint of some conservatives, they do see the content of some social science humanities fields, and they think, that there is indoctrination. I mean, when we interviewed professors, we found that most were pretty careful about either concealing their views from students, their own political views, or if they didn't conceal their political views, about making clear to students, these are just my own politics, you don't have to feel this way. I think, again, in fairness to the conservative argument, there are fields in the social sciences and humanities where, again, the content of those fields is just kind of more left-leaning than, mm-hmm. than right-leaning. And so in those fields, even if you're just kind of objectively teaching the content of the fields, I could see that conservatives would say, well, but you're still, this is still political work. Even this is still, you're still asking them to learn about political ideas, basically.
Sure.
They're just kind of dressed up in the mantle of science or whatever. So I see a point to that, although I think that it's easy to overestimate, how much of a field like sociology, for example, is really about that. By the same token, I think that we do err in failing to recognize that most professors do think of themselves as professionals and do recognize that the most important thing that they're doing in the classroom is just teaching, and the most important thing they're doing in terms of research is just research. And While certainly there are exceptions and people who deviate from these norms, that remains the norm in American higher education.
I don't know. I kind of see a certain self-flattery here on the part of, well, conservatives, I think, are flattering academics because I don't think they have any impact. Really, I don't think they have any impact at all on people's politics. It's very nice to hear that. But I, you know, in my experience, I've just not seen it. And it's a, you know, it's an interesting thing to say. And maybe academics think that if they are left wing, they're going to, you know, affect their students in some way and bend their politics. But all the evidence that you suggest, it seems that you present seems to suggest that there isn't any such effect.
Yeah, I mean, there's you know, this big debate about this among social scientists. I mean, for a long time, there was evidence that, you know, people did believe that that exposure to higher education did tend to make people more liberal in terms of some of their political views. And more recently, there's been you know, reanalysis of some of these data, and you know, on the reanalysis, the finding is that actually it's not that higher education made people more liberal; it's that people who were, you know, were more liberal, were either more likely to go to higher education, and more likely to go, you know, go get a BA, or that people who were on the way to becoming more liberal were more likely to go get a BA. So increasingly, we're coming to doubt whether. Whether going to college makes you substantially more liberal. Now, that's true for, you know, that's true for some attitude areas, and maybe less true for others. So, you know, is there really strong evidence that you know, going to college you know, makes students have much stronger left-leaning economic views? No, there's very little evidence of that. Is there evidence that, you know, going for higher education can make you more tolerant of diversity, for example? And the evidence seems to suggest that, yeah, there is, you know, some evidence to that effect. But the idea that, you know, students are going to college and, you know, becoming massively secularized or moving really far to the left as a result of their college experience is, I think, that there's reason to doubt that.
Yeah, I think I would put it more strongly than that. And I have to people on the conservative end of the scale who have said to me, you know, that where you work is a bastion of liberal ideologues. And I'm going, that may be, but it just doesn't matter. See? Also, I mean, in terms of the publications, the things that we publish, the way that we publish, you know, people don't read our books. So it's not as if we can have, I'm sorry, maybe they read yours. They don't read mine. And so it's not as if we're going to have any impact on public opinion. I mean, occasionally there's a David Horowitz. We'll talk about him in a second. But, you know, he's frying a different fish. He's using this as a political weapon. And so let's talk a little bit about that. The second half of the title of your book is Why Do Conservatives Care About This? So let's talk about that.
Sure. Well, you know, one thing is, just as I said, that that higher education has been left-leaning for a long time. I mean, conservatives have been up in arms about this for a long time. You know, for the research that I did for this book, I went back and looked at old issues of National Review dating back to the mid-50s. And, you know, of course, folks there like William Buckley were complaining about the liberal tendencies of higher education even then. So this goes back a long time. In terms of why conservatives care about it, I mean, I think there are kind of two answers ultimately. And you know, maybe I should say that there are different ways of approaching this question. I mean, one is to ask, okay, literally, what are they upset about? I mean, what do conservatives say that they're angry about? And I do try to talk about this in the book, but you know, I'm a sociologist, and so I'm ultimately interested not in you know, presenting people's reasons for thinking what they're, you know, for taking the positions they do, but in trying to explain you know, why they're actually doing what they're doing. So in the arguments that I make in the book, there's sort of two that stand out. The first is that simply higher education is left leaning and has been for a long time. And although you're right that that there are always questions about whether anyone is reading academic books, it's also true that there have been over the course of history, you know, many academics who have been pretty deeply involved in liberal politics. I mean, that was true in the 50s. It was true in certainly the 60s, 70s, and it remains true today. And while they ultimately, you know, may have less impact than they'd like through their involvement, I mean, I think it's not unsurprising that that some conservatives would take issue with what they're doing and rally against it. And so I think that's the first thing that explains it. I mean, just it is a left-leaning occupation, so it's not surprising that, you know, some conservatives are going to be upset about this. And, you know, maybe especially so in a context where it's really important for students to go to college if they you know, want to have middle-class lives. The second factor, though, that I describe in the book has to do with what rallying against the liberal professoriate gets the conservative movement. And here I'm not trying to paint a picture of folks like David Horowitz as being, you know, necessarily strategic in this regard, but I think there's evidence to suggest that, you know, one of the things that this has gotten the conservative movement over the years is it's given them an elite to rally against. I mean, it was fascinating to find people like Bill Buckley and not just criticizing liberal professors, but specifically criticizing the liberal elite in higher education. And of course, that is a phrase that remains very common today among conservative activists and politicians and commentators. And, you know, why is that important? Well, I argue in the book that it's important because it helped to position conservatism as a populist enterprise, as something, you know, where, you know, we the people are standing against a predatory, corrupt elite that's using its power against us in a negative way. And I think this was very important in helping to build the contemporary conservative movement. And I think that line, that trope, remains powerful today, in part because it still has all of these kind of populist energies surrounding it. So those are my two main reasons. I think that you know, conservatives care about this or are upset about it, sociologically speaking, again, because academia is a left-leaning occupation, and because I think it serves the important purpose of helping to help boost the populist credibility of the right.
Yeah, I mean, I think you're right about that, and I know that when, you know, well, I won't name any names, but when liberal professors with a certain public profile, and I think that the degree to which they have any impact on the public mind in general is just vastly overrated. Nobody reads the New York Review of Books. Sorry, New York Review of Books. That when they do say something outrageous, that they do conservatives a huge favor because it gives them material. You know, just like when somebody on the, you know, Pat Robertson says something outrageous, it does liberals a huge favor. Because they're saying things that are kind of out of touch, and
well, I
go ahead.
I do think that I mean, it is the case that conservatives have you know, been quick to jump on any new material that they come across in this regard from professors. That's certainly right.
Yeah, it's interesting. It's interesting to me because, you know, one of the things you don't mention in the book, I think you don't mention in the book, I read it a couple of weeks ago, is that one of the unintended consequences of this is to make academia seem like less than a serious place. Mm. It's full of people who just aren't, you know, they do not have a good grasp of the way things are. That they are totally out of step. That what they say doesn't matter. And I think that's very unfortunate.
Yeah, I mean, I do think that the whole you know, discourse about higher education and politics is overstated and overdrawn and cartoonish in parts, and it would be great if both sides could come to a more reasonable place of discussion.
Mm-hmm. Do you see any of this changing? I mean, is academia going to become more conservative or more liberal or anything like that? Are we at a kind of a point of equilibrium now?
You know, it's very hard to predict what's going to happen. I mean, there's some evidence to suggest that, you know, the youngest professors today might be more drawn toward the Occupy Wall Street movement, and certainly there's lots of concern about inequality. You know, whether this will significantly shift the professoriate or not, I don't know. In part because there are lots of countervailing trends. Having to do with, for example, the expansion of business programs, which would, you know, tend to grow more conservative regions of academia. You know, I think that that it's probably pretty much steady state. I mean, I think, you know, we'll probably see, you know, current trends in the politics of academics continue for the next at least 5 to 10 years. You know, who knows, as higher education goes through a big period of reform and gets changed around institutionally, I guess it's hard to know what'll happen, you know, 10 years down the line. But I think it's, you know, for the foreseeable future, this is the way things are.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I kind of agree with you about that. I don't see this changing, except in to say that it may be the case, and I won't be specific, that being an academic will lose even what prestige it has. And then I think fewer people of the liberal bent will go into it. I don't know if that's going to be the case, but it seems to me
we'll we'll see. I mean, you know, traditionally higher education has been a pretty high prestige occupation, although that's varied a lot by politics. So, you know, it's a high prestige occupation for liberals. It's not so much of a high prestige occupation among conservatives. It'll be interesting to see whether that changes. I mean, there's some evidence to suggest that it might be changing. And to suggest that professors will increasingly be seen as, you know, more like teachers, and less like, you know, a kind of special category.
Yeah.
A different category. I mean, that could well be the case as more and more people go to higher education, and it ceases to be an experience of just a really privileged few, and increasingly is something that more people have access to.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
It could be that higher education will change in that regard.
I'd be very interested in hearing about how your book has been received and what sort of correspondence you have had about it with various folks. Could you tell us a little bit about that?
Sure. I think that the reactions to it so far have been kind of as you would expect. I mean, some folks on the right have said that the book does too much to play down the possibility that discrimination is going on here, and you know, that's kind of what you would expect. Others have said that the charge that conservatives are really after higher education because it helps to boost the sense of the conservative movement as being populist. They've said, well, you know, that downplays what, you know, conservatives are really all about. And those arguments make sense. And, you know, on the left, there hasn't been as much reaction so far. But my sense is that folks think that maybe I'm giving too much credit to the right here. Certainly, you know, some have suggested that, you know, maybe there are really personality differences between liberals and conservatives, and, you know, maybe I'm downplaying those too much. So, you know, they're kind of as you'd expect. I mean, you know, one of the funny things about this topic is that, as I think you've noted, there are so many folk theories about this, in part because it's a topic that just makes it easy for both sides to invoke stereotypes and kind of stick to their guns. And, you know, I hope that that some folks will be moved to take a more nuanced view of this debate as a result of reading this book. You know, but it's not exactly surprising that folks who are, you know, pretty firmly in either camp are going to, you know, basically remain in that camp.
Mm-hmm. So has John Stewart called you to be on yet?
No call.
He should. I'm hoping anybody who listens to this and knows John Stewart or somebody who works for John Stewart, I think you should call Neil and have him on the show, because this is just the kind of thing that he likes to do. Occasionally he goes highbrow, you know. And I think that you'd be great on his show, and you could kind of explain this to the masses. Let me ask just one final question. And again, I'm reiterating, really. I mean, I'm just asking somebody, does it really matter at all that, I mean, if you're sort of objective about it, you know, you're thinking about things that really matter as opposed to like getting elected or, you know, sort of selling your political rag, does it really matter at all that the professors are liberal? I guess I've already reached this conclusion. It just doesn't seem to me.
Yeah. I mean, I definitely see that point. I mean, I guess the one thing that I'll say is that I think it matters in the sense that, I mean, I don't know whether it matters that professors are liberal, I mean, in terms of the research that's done. But I think that the perception that higher education is biased matters.
Yeah, that's true.
I think that you know, this is a period when, you know, really American higher education is going through some difficult times. I mean, it has perpetually gone through difficult times, but this is really a time of significant change and reform. And and particularly in terms of public higher education, you're seeing efforts in a number of states, Texas, for example, Florida, and elsewhere, by Republican politicians to fundamentally change the way that higher education products are delivered, and to change even the structure of the university. And there are multiple sources of multiple things driving this, but I think one of them is just the perception that higher education is not only liberal but biased, and students are getting a biased education. And I think that perception is going to have real effects. I think it's already having real effects, and I think it's going to continue to have real effects down the line. So I think that perception, matters. I think that ultimately, in most fields of study, as you suggest, I think most professors are professionals, and they try to keep their own politics out of their research, out of their teaching. I mean, I've certainly tried to keep my own politics out of this book to the extent that I can. But I think maybe we could even do more. I mean, I think professors in the context of these big challenges facing higher education, some of which have a kind of political element to them, I think we could do a better job of reassuring everyone that that classrooms are not sites of indoctrination, and that we try to be fair in the research that we carry out. So I'm not exactly sure what efforts along those lines would look like, but I think we could do more by way of reassurance.
Yeah, from your lips to God's ears, I guess I would say, I think that we should do a better job of doing a lot of things like that and sort of stay out of politics, but that's just me. So, Neil, I want to say thank you so much for being on the show today. Let me ask you our traditional final question. What are you working on now?
Well, I have two projects in the works. One is a study of liberal conservative differences in attitudes towards science, focusing not on professors but on the general population. And the second is a study in the other area in which I work, which is sociological theory, and that's a study of the nature of causation in the social world. So two projects, both of which I'm sure will take me many years to work through.
Yeah, those are big ones, so good luck on those. Let me thank everyone for listening. I'm Marshall Poe, the editor-in-chief of the New Books Network, and today we've been talking with Neil Gross about his book, Why Are Professors Liberal and Why Do Conservatives Care? I want to wish everybody a great week, and I want to thank Neil again for being on the show. Thanks, Neil.
It was my pleasure. Thanks for having me.